So moving on to agenda paper 20. Can you go over to Siobhan?
Yep. The board published the disclosure of accounting policies exposure draft in August 2019. The comment period of that exposure draft closed on the 29th of November 2019, and as per Appendix A, we received 88 comment letters in response. So just to summarise the highlights of the paper, so almost all respondents did support the proposal to paragraph 117 of IS1 that would replace the requirement of an entity to disclose its significant accounting policies with the requirement to disclose its material accounting policies. Most respondents supported the proposed statement that not all accounting policies relating to material transactions, other events, or conditions are themselves material to an entity's financial statements. However, respondents also expressed concerns about some of the specific terminology used in the proposal and suggested amendments for the board to consider. Most respondents supported the proposal to include in IAS1 examples of circumstances in which an entity is likely to consider an accounting policy to be material to its financial statements. However, some respondents also expressed concerns about some of the proposed paragraphs, particularly paragraph 117BE of IAS1. Most of these respondents had concerns that the proposed paragraph 117BE relates to what disclosures should be made about a material accounting policy and not whether that accounting policy is itself material. Most respondents supported the proposal to add examples to the materiality practice statement that illustrate how the concept of materiality can be applied in making decisions about accounting policy disclosures. However, respondents expressed concerns about the conclusions reached in those examples and how they aligned to the proposed guidance in IAS1. In particular, many of these respondents did not support the conclusion reached in proposed example T. Many respondents also expressed concerns that the board is assuming that primary users have a greater knowledge of the requirements of IFRS standards than is the case. Some of these respondents also sympathized with the alternative view to the exposure draft. So to help us develop our papers for future meetings, we would now like to hand over to the board for their thoughts on the feedback received. Thank you.
Thank you. So first, thank you very much for the paper. It's like a speech. I have a dream. In paragraph 59, when we discuss about technology, I know that some expressed the view that we could try to make possible to have the accounting policies disclosed outside financial statements and be cross-referenced to it. I particularly believe that if we are able to find a solution and go in this direction, it would really save some costs for some companies that need, for example, to publish their financial statements. And at the same time, the information would be there. Also, in practice, I saw many financial statements that when you look at the accounting policies to try to find out what is the accounting policy for certain transactions, sometimes the accounting policy is so concise that you are not able to get the information you are seeking for. I suppose that when you have this outside and people doesn't have the cost of putting more wording on it, probably you'll be able to get more information. And also, as an intermediate solution, different from the numbers, figures that change every year. Accounting policies, sometimes you have the same accounting policy for 10 years, 15 years. And the most important is if there is an accounting policy that is relevant for a transaction that has happened that year or because it has changed. For these ones, maybe we should bring this to the financial statement. For those that are the same as last year, for example, we could do this outside and make a cross-reference. That's the bit of the comment letters that I think that would be interesting, especially for some jurisdiction, and maybe we can reconcile the position of those that would like to have less, those that believe that should information be kept.
Just if I could just add to that, I think what you're suggesting there, it sounds like a good idea. We did explore it as part of our Principles of Disclosure project and discussed ways in which we could actually perhaps have accounting policies, for example, on the company website with the cross-links and cross-references towards it. What we came across in terms of feedback on that suggestion in the Principles of Disclosure discussion paper were concerns about regulatory requirements. Yep. And that in some cases and in quite a few jurisdictions, in fact, it would be very difficult to actually do that because of the rules and regulations that are around what needs to be included in the financial statements. So we explored it. Unfortunately, there were lots of sort of practical issues associated with it, which is why we didn't sort of pursue it further as part of this project.
Now, I know some of the difficulties, including auditing information, what is the boundaries,
yes,
of the audit work. I mean, that I know that all these difficulties. That's why I started my comments with I had a dream. But I still believe that in one time, in the future maybe, we will be able to do that. I think that's where we are going to.
Nick.
Thank you. I've got a dream as well. it's not unrelated, but I'll come on to it in a moment. It's similar, but not unrelated. A few things from the comment letters that I read, which I think we probably need to pick up on. So I was rather disturbed that some people would be thinking about materiality just in terms of amount rather than nature and amount, and we need to reinforce that both are important. I liked, I can't remember if it was more than one respondent, but talking about information about accounting policies rather than just accounting policies, I thought was a legitimate observation from one stakeholder. And then clearly there's a whole load of uncertainty people feel about information about immaterial accounting policies and whether it's permitted, prohibited, or discouraged. And perhaps we left that purposely open-ended, but people are looking for some guidance there. And I guess the big issue, though, is goes back to who the user is, and it's partly where this information sits and Martin's view that had been expressed. And I think it's absolutely right to say that not all primary users, even professional capital market users, are accounting experts. I think it's absolutely correct. Probably the minority are. But we still have this issue of just too much, and actually the amount that's disclose obscuring the really critical issue. And I think to shy away from that, you know, the fundamental problem we're seeking to deal with here, because there are lots of other needs, and some of them, you know, educational almost, is not the right answer. There was one letter that talked about desperately needing to contain a boilerplate disclosure verbose and immaterial, overwhelming, useful information. And it's got to the point where lots of people then will just turn right, or go through the pages, or just turn through them as quickly as possible. And so whether it's technology or whether it's another solution, whether it's saying, actually, the really critical stuff doesn't need to be up there up front, but the other stuff can go in an appendix. And there are examples of preparers that do that today. So I don't, you know, it's not unknown, but that would seem to potentially solve both or the needs of perhaps, as we think, primary users and then other users as well. I see them both as being legitimate requests, I have to say. But we do have a problem today. The status quo is far from an optimal solution. And I think if we stick with that, whilst acknowledging there are other issues, that will be an unfortunate position for us to end in.
Mary?
Let me start by picking up on Nick, the point Nick was focused on. I had noted the same kind of mix of views about boilerplate, you know, whether we were prohibiting, discouraging, or permitting immaterial disclosures. And I want to say, much as I would like to say we should be prohibiting it, I think that that's not operational. And so my very strong encouragement is that we go down a route that emphasizes the requirement to not obscure material information and really, you know, bring that to the forefront. I think that falls into the discouraging overall the presentation of immaterial, but not prohibiting it, because I can think of some things that local regulatory may require you to, let's say, number of employees or FTEs, different statistics that I think we don't want to create a clash. We just want to emphasize, if we can deal with most of the problem by emphasizing that it's the organization and the placement. And I think the materiality practice statement does a nice job of discussing that point. So I think we need to be clear which it is that we're doing. And I would encourage pursuing the discourage by virtue of really emphasizing the obligation to not obscure material information. The second thing that Nick raised, and I had also picked up on, I thought it was a really interesting point about whether we're requiring disclosure of material information about accounting policies versus material accounting policies, and thinking about what that difference in wording might mean, and whether it would be helpful or not. I think overall we have to, first and foremost, we have to be clear about which it is, and that's partly drafting, but it's making up our minds and then drafting to that, but thinking about what the different implications are. And the third thing is, I saw some scattered comments about, once I saw the examples you were proposing for the materiality practice statement or something, we got a better idea of what you were proposing in terms of the amendments. And I think that we have to remember that the materiality practice statement is not part of IFRS standards. So I think it just means that we have to look at the feedback and think about whether the process of exposure has highlighted anything that we have to think about moving from one document to the other, so that the amendments to IFRS standards stand on their own. There wasn't any one thing that leapt out, but I think we, that's a general reaction response to this paper.
Jing Chao?
Yes. Just a couple of comments and questions. First, paragraph 15B mentioned that some stakeholders suggested that we should focus on the information provided by the accounting policy rather than accounting policy itself. For me, actually, our exposure draft actually address the information about accounting policy. So I'm not sure what that means, the information provided by an accounting policy. It should be the same. It still should be the information about accounting policy, not the results, amounts, or other things about, after applying an accounting policy. So I think our exposure draft is clear, just a disclosure the information about the accounting policy. So just to clarify whether my understanding is correct. Second, I think Nick also mentioned that when we talk about the material accounting policy, which is related to transaction events, which are material not only by amount but also nature. Thirdly, paragraph 29 mentioned that some respondents believe that we should change the paragraph 117BC and make its reference to voluntary changes accounting policy. From my point of view, it's different, because if we look at the 117BC, that addresses the situation when there is no existing accounting standards available for some specific transaction event. Then you needed to develop another accounting policy according to IAS 8. This is not the voluntarily changing accounting policy. This is developing new accounting policy based on IAS 8. So I think this is different. I think, just to make clear. And third, fourth, paragraph 30, some respondent also mentioned another case. To clarify that accounting policy not only needed to, whether it's material or not, not only based on a judgment, assessment, which we have, you know, transaction or event occurred, but also should be adjusted based on when they do not. I feel very, a little bit confused, but there is an example here. Said that if an entity decided that, okay, it did not control another entity, they still needed to disclose the judgment, why they, I think it's normally we, once the transaction is there, or once you control an entity, then you needed to, you know, to disclose the judgment and why you decided it's control another entity. If it's not, why you still needed to disclose? And that, it seems that because it depends on the underlying transaction events, so I feel also a little bit confused about this suggestion or these comments. With regard to the comments on paragraph 117BE, I have sympathy with those comments. It seems that I'm a little bit confused whether we are address those circumstances or where we are really just to address those accounting policy itself is material or not. And secondly, there's clearly there's some overlap between 117BE and 117C. Whether we really we would like to address entity-specific, you know, disclosure requirements, something like that, circumstances. So I think these comments, I think we should rethink about that, whether we can improve that paragraph. With regard to the, let me look, okay. With regard to the example, I think there are a lot of concern about the second example, example T. It seems I, when I look back, look at those comments made, I have sympathy with those comments because sometimes they just repeated the accounting policy, including standards. But that's those policies are really important. And secondly, because we're using example of impairment, and impairment need significant assumption, judgment, but it's need we have to look at other standards such as IS 36 and what kind of information needs to be improved, disclosed. So I think that example, we do need to spend some time to improve that example. If finally we decide to include that example into the practice statement on materiality. Some suggestion included in the 40, paragraph 46, I think those suggestions are very useful. We can develop some improvement based on those suggestions. That's all. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Francoise.
Thank you. Well, I mean, I was struck by the fact that there were, in fact, so many people that would like to hold to details of accounting policies that reflect, in fact, IFRS requirements and not entity-specific material. So I guess the first element is that I think we need to stick to the decision that we had made of leading people into really what is material, in other words, what is really the entity-specific application of IFRS requirements to a particular set of transactions. And I don't have full visibility in what we do, but I think the expression that users may need more, I think it's more in the nature of educational material than it is disclosures. I don't know the extent of what we have. We propose ourselves, I think we do quite a lot, but maybe we have some form of promotion to make of educational material. But the response to me would be that and not amending our decisions in terms of what is material. I agree with some requests that we emphasize better or in our drafting. I guess we have to revisit the drafting where it has caused problems and more particularly when people, just like was already said, I mean, that indeed it's nature and amount and not amount only, and they derive that from our drafting. And again, emphasizing the entity specific nature of the information, some people with that. In terms of where the example should be located, my perception so far, I hope it's not mistaken, but that was the practice statement had been a document that had been identified, welcome, and used. So I've been a bit surprised by the fact that people would say, well, don't put example there, that's not where they belong. I think examples in any event are part of the non-authoritative guidance anyway. And again, my perception was that the practice statement was had achieved its objective, so I would keep it, I could keep those elements there. In that famous example T, I think the example is useful because it illustrates, you know, how we are moving away from reflecting what IFRS requirements are. The example itself emphasizes already that you have all the disclosures in IAS 36 to provide and everything. Maybe the emphasis there is not enough, even though it is a fair reflection of the requirements that we have in paragraph 117. So maybe this has to be improved. But I could find a form of reconciliation between so many people being against what we were proposing and not being happy with the example. So I would prefer to keep things, you know, as understandable as possible and not move away from an example that has been unpleasant just because it was reflecting something that people did wrong.
Gary?
Thank you. And, I like this paper, and actually I like the takeaway conclusions out of it. I'm sort of looking at it a little bit different from the bulk of the words in the paper. We had 88 comment letters, a very wide distribution looking at your pie charts. And unlike most of the documents we put out for comment, the words that keep coming through here are almost all agree, most agree, throughout this whole thing. So what that tells me is we largely got it right. And we therefore not to say that the negatives or the disagreements should not be processed. But they, in the main, they're not the central issues. I mean, whether it's terminology or example T, I mean, we can easily write a different example if that's what we had to do. If that's not illustrating the point, then we can write one easy enough that does. But I don't think we should beat ourselves up too much on those that disagreed. I think we should try to move through them fairly quickly because, in the main, everyone agreed with what we're trying to do here. I agree with Mary's comment that we can't outlaw immaterial disclosures, nor I don't think should we. I think we've largely been on a track of discouraging it with every possible utterance that we can make to the point where it shouldn't just obscure material information. I don't think we can go further than that. I honestly don't believe, I've never believed that just repeating the words in a standard is particularly useful. If the standard is it's the assets measured at fair value, I'm not sure you need to know that much more than that. You know, you don't have to go through the minutiae, the internal processes, and this was third-party valuation versus whatever else. And granted, if you have more level three assets, maybe you need more than if they're mostly level one or two. But the accounting policy, reiterating, it doesn't add a lot of decision useful information, in my judgment, most of the time. So, and I think we should very quickly move through the issues that came through here and not dwell on it interminably because I think, in general, most people agreed with what we proposed here. Unless we should build on that.
There were
Thank you. It was a very good paper, good summary, interesting as well. There were a few things that came to my mind as I was looking at it that are more observations rather than specific requests. One thing that really struck me was this view that came through from a number of people, I can't remember, many, that they thought that the focus should be... They thought that there was a role for providing information to help primary users understand the requirement, to understand the financial statements, I think. And I guess a couple of observations on that. I'm not sure that would make me think that materiality wasn't right. I don't know whether that means that they are saying we should be using a different criteria to materiality because they think it should be a different cut, and we should think about that, or whether it means that we need to think about trying to help them in another way, so sticking with materiality but looking at education or something like that along the lines of Francoise and Nick have touched on. I would be interested, though, to know whether we've got much information from users themselves about what they think on this point as opposed to other people saying what they think users need. So I'd be interested in understanding that when we, if we look at it again. The other thing that struck me quite a bit was there seemed... I think we'd tried to use the examples to try and explain how we were thinking about materiality and how to draw the line for accounting policy information, which is why it's in the materiality practice statement. But I got a sense the number of people really wanted us to be using examples to show them how entity-specific information should be provided, which is not really the thing for the materiality practice statement, but I guess it means we should maybe think about whether there's a need for that somewhere or not. So I don't think it should... It's a materiality thing, but maybe it's a useful thing. The other thing that I noticed was the comments on IFRS 7, which, of course, I was looking for because we talked about this quite a lot when we were doing the drafting, and my sense at the time was that we hadn't intended to sort of indirectly change the requirements in IFRS 7 by tinkering with the word materiality versus significant in IAS 1, which was why we proposed this change. My understanding was we did mean what people have taken away from it here, that we, in a sense, were saying we think it is always material, so therefore we're requiring it. I think that's something we should circle back and just confirm with the board in the project. Then the last thing I was going to comment on is this point about prohibiting or whatever immaterial disclosures, and my recollection is we've talked about that in passing, at least in the past, and we had decided not to say... that we couldn't say you needed to prohibit immaterial disclosures because there was a concern that from an enforcement perspective, no securities regulator is going to make somebody restate their financial statements to remove immaterial information. So it sort of doesn't really work to prohibit it, even though all of our signals, of course, are to at least discourage it. And that was my recollection. Tom?
Yeah, I just want to pick up, I think, on... what Nick and Mary said. The big gain here is to get the material policies front and center and easily visible. And I'm sympathetic, though, to the concern raised by Martin, and that a lot of people seem to recognize that for some people it's helpful to, and they, you know, a lot of people can't access the standard very readily. And so, does the entity know its consumers of its reports, and is it reasonable for it to do this? And when I went back and just looked at this whole question about, because a lot of people wrote in, and if it was the case that we haven't prohibited and they can merely do this, I don't think so many would have written in. They would have just been silent. And I tried to look back at, like, what do we really say? And my hope is that we can maybe do something that would preserve, I kind of like, I think a little bit along what Nick and Mary were saying, preserve the materiality stuff unequivocally as a goal. But can we accommodate the desire to let less sophisticated readers know readily what the policies are of the entity without doing, because... In 117A, we just say, need not be disclosed. Okay, so that sort of sounds like it's a choice. So you got to do the material. The immaterial is up to you. But then when you go back to what we said about the materiality definition on obscuring, is are people going to read that and say, if I put in all this other stuff, am I violating? And I think it would probably be E in IAS 1, as a result of material information being hidden by immaterial information to the extent the primary user is unable to determine which is material or what is material. And I could see people when they read that, and if they try to accommodate just the user who needs some help, are they at risk of violating this? So they put, and so I don't know whether it's possible to think about a way of delineating, and if I heard Nick correctly, I think he was sort of talking a little bit along those lines, so that the really material stuff is unequivocally there, but you could kind of do this. So without having an answer, like, I think that would maybe be a nice compromise because, as people said, otherwise some people are going to do it because they think they're okay, and some people might be frightened away, and I don't think that would be a good result.
Chung Wei.
This is a nice paper, the summary. Just I'm curious on the paragraph 51. If you see B, there are some supported accounting policies, just a duplication, boilerplate, and disclosure, so they are all immaterial and should not be disclosed. This kind of a small comments from some. But anyway, this is not our objective of this exposure draft, right? Mm-hmm. Whether we disclose the accounting policies or not, right? So the first question, almost all respondents say, yes, just replacing significant with material. We are not relating to any disclosure or not to accounting policies, right? So just I'm wondering, if we put a question whether to disclose the accounting policies or not, maybe then we can get some kind of another dimension of the feedback from our stakeholders. Just I'm curious because, you know, Martin raised a similar issue and Nick raised a similar issue. You know, this total amount of the policies is quite huge in our annual report and every financial statement. So as you hear, some people would like to just remove everything. Actually, material by definition, they must be disclosed by definition. But any material items must be disclosed regardless of the cut bonds or not. But if we forget that materiality, then this kind of a small stakeholders are saying, suggesting complete removal of the account policy might be another issue. We should see, in future, maybe not now, but see in future.
Martin, were you pleased that some people responded to your alternative view?
Yeah, very happy.
They disagree with you.
some not.
Many agree.
Yeah.
Small majority.
And I really think we should not be too emphasis on that if duplication of what is already in the standard, yes or no. That is, I think, would be the solution. Because my example is, for example, if we issue IFRS 70. Let's assume a big insurance company has done it
when?
For...
Not if. When it's issued.
It's issued, yeah.
So it's in the first year is a new accounting standard, and then, okay, it's material, they should disclosing that. And let's assume in the second year. I would assume, I think also for a big insurance company, they should disclose something about their accounting policy of IFRS 17. So if, say, for example, a life insurance company uses only the general model and maybe uses the OCI option, would it be sufficient to say, okay, we're using the OCI option for financial risk? I think not. I think it is a kind of insurance. I would expect to them, okay, a short description, what is a general model, is a kind of current value, blah, 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 and in this regard we're using that. That is, for me, I think, not irrelevant information. It is in the context of that, and I think it is in the context of a complicated accounting standard. I think I would assume that some people would a little bit description of what is already in the standard. And that is my point, because not everybody is an expert and can say, oh, it was an OCI option, where is it? And so I can, in the context of that, I think it is allowed to repeat and duplicate and blah, 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 even if it is a kind of a complicated standard like IFRS 17. For me, that is a midway. I think it is not the, there's not one solution for that. I think we should not be too artificial, saying if it is the reputation, it is always obscuring. I think that is not the case. I think it's a middle way we have to find in that. That is my reading also on the comment letters, that people want to have it in the context, and sometimes the context matters, even if it is a repeating the IFRS standard.
Anne. I think what Martin's pointing us to is that there are some parts of policies that are material. So we've been talking at the higher level, you know, are the policies material or the policies not? But in fact, there's parts within. So particularly if we pick up on the feedback we've had about the material disclosures, disclosures of material information. So using Martin's example, there are sections there that would be material. What the entity is doing with in that standard, there'll be information there that's material. How we get around the fact that that material information sits within a whole lot of other information about the accounting policy is something that we would have to work on. And we've had a couple of suggestions already today on how to address that, given what we know about the difficulty of taking the cross-referencing outside. From the feedback on the principles of disclosure, we didn't get much encouragement to keep going down that way, which does seem the obvious way, to put this policy somewhere on the website or somewhere else. Maybe that means we have to think about having the policies in one place and then another mechanism for emphasising the parts of information that are the material information that are entity-specific so that people can find it, because then that is addressing the question we're raising about obscuring information. If the material information just sits within all the general text, then it's hard for people to find.
Okay, have you got what you need?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So moving on to consistent application, so agenda paper series 12. Thank you.